KLYT Broadcast Studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on tech is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790. Text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right. A little bit of house cleaning before we get to today's guest. First off, prayers for those dealing with the wildfires on Maui. Transportation there. Pray for the state officials. Clearly, there's got to be federal officials getting involved in this eventually. And actually, I went to Samaritan's Purse website to see if they already have action planned. You know, from what I've seen over the years, it just would super surprise me if Samaritan's Purse is not going to be involved in some of the cleanup after this. So you may go to their website to look for updates as things continue to progress. But I mean, over 30 people have lost their lives to these wildfires on Maui. So keep that in your prayers, and we'll try to keep you updated as best we can as well as far as the relief efforts with Samaritan's Purse. Through the month of August, Lighthouse Christian Radio in Belize is our featured ministry. And we hope you'll find out more about the ministry by going to klyt.fm. Click on the link there, and it'll take you to a place where actually you can financially support what they're doing there. They're looking for support for the staff, equipment repair and update, and resources for outreach. Clive Welsh, the general manager at Lighthouse Christian Radio in Belize, we have scheduled to be in studio with us actually a week from today. So looking forward to having Clive in with us, a dear old friend. And one other note, Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque, they are having their 40th Walk for Life this Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. Hopefully you've already registered and gotten pledge sheets, but if not, go to carenetabq.com/events. You can download the pledge forms or you can register for the event as well. But listen, if you didn't do any of that, as Jen was telling us when she was in studio with us this week, just show up on Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, and you can participate in the walk. You can register there, and they'll have activities happening. It's at Hoffmantown Church, and of course walking around the academy as part of the Walk for Life this year. All of the Albuquerque CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque locations are consolidated to one location for the walk, and that'll be at Hoffmantown Church, Harper and Ventura in Albuquerque. All right, house cleaning done. We welcome our guest for the hour today from the Rio Grande Foundation and Errors of Enchantment. Paul Gessing is in studio. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, good to be with you, Steve.
Thanks for your patience as we kind of went through all of that.
Not a problem. Thanks for your patience with me, as I always cut it close to the time allotted when we start show.
Busy guy, and you do all the, I mean, all you, you know, and all the stuff we're going to talk about, you're well acquainted with. So we'll jump right into it with some of the information you provided already at errorsofenchantment.com. Everyone's favorite subject, property tax.
Interesting thing that we don't talk about all that much at the Rio Grande Foundation.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking. I read this, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, because maybe there's some stuff that I'm not catching. But let's hear what your thoughts are.
So first and foremost, the primary conversation is going to be about the assessor in Bernalillo County. So it's a local issue here with an elected official. Damian Lara was elected this past November. It's a little bit on the obscure side relative to other offices that we're voting for in these elections, but it's often a stepping stone for higher office. And Mr. Lara's job is to make sure that the properties, both residential and commercial, are assessed at a value that reflects the broader market and what they should be taxed at in terms of how much money, you know, the percentage, whatever our property taxes is, that they're assessed at a fair rate, which right. is often considered the highest fair value. Now, one interesting point that I was not aware of that he brought up in a recent interview is that there's a very significant difference locally in terms of how much over the last decade residential versus non-residential valuations have gone up.
So he brought this to
he brought this up.
Oh, okay.
And it's a publication called Downtown Albuquerque News. So I'll give them fair credit for it. It's an online-only publication, and I happen to be a subscriber to it through the foundation. I pulled out some of this for Errors of Enchantment. But according to him, residential valuations have gone up by a whopping 42% over the last decade. Commercial or non-residential have gone up by 4.5%. Now, that's just an interesting thing and an interesting dynamic. Now, what I suspect is that you have, areas where people live, houses, there's high demand for those. We know that the real estate market
right.
is hot for individuals, family houses,
apartments.
I mean,
apartments. We only just recently, got up to over 1,000 availabilities residential-wise citywide?
Yeah. And not so much for traditional commercial real estate. There's a variety of factors going on there. The rise of the internet economy, uh-huh. A lot of malls and other commercial businesses have struggled. Our local economy, we know, is relatively weak. There's crime issues, and that keeps those that they want to raise assessments, in some cases pretty dramatically, on these commercial real estate businesses or commercial businesses by, or if they're not occupying those offices. So if there's unoccupied yeah. facilities or parking lots, those people are going to be getting a significant increase in their valuations. And my concern is that we're politicizing. We are using a blunt tool of these property evaluations to make make policy decisions in terms of how property should be used in Albuquerque. We know, for example, downtown Albuquerque is challenged by crime, by a lack of business demand for those properties. We know that there are a lot of issues with that. And it just strikes me as we could do a lot more if we got serious about public safety
yeah.
and got serious about business development and attraction, rather than using the assessor's office to increase valuations and hope that that gets some better usage for that real estate, that maybe people who are sitting on property sell it off to somebody. I just don't see the usage, the potential usage for those facilities as being there. I think we know the crime issue is a big problem. And if we solve that, then we would see valuations go up. It shouldn't be raise valuations and then hope that better quality businesses move
okay.
into the areas.
So I try to consume this, before you.
It's
got
a tricky
here.
Issue.
Well, and let me throw a couple things at you, because I'm not dogmatic on a position on either, and I won't be by the end of the show probably, but some of the things that I thought about, it sounded to me from the article like they were almost targeting those lots or businesses that
right.
are vacant or empty or just a dirt lot with a sign on it.
Uh-huh.
And the thought, and I agree with what you're saying about crime and things, is it kind of a vicious circle though? Those properties are facilitating some of that crime.
And I agree. And that's a problem for the mayor's office and for the enforcement of our laws. And if they
yeah.
are considered nuisance properties, they need to be treated as such. And that can include just, boarding them up and taking them over. That has been done and it can be done. So the concern is that we are using a tool that is not made for improving safety
right.
that kind of thing.
Right.
These assessments on property.
Agreed.
We should be doing this
yeah.
through the police actions
yeah.
of local governments, not through the assessor's
yeah.
office. And that's my concern. Plus, if you do raise a bunch of assessments and something positive works out where you're getting new businesses and whatnot, so say his plan works, what are we going to do with all of those dollars that are flowing in? Is this going to be just another windfall for local government?
Right.
Or are we going to see our valuations reduced maybe at the residential level. I suspect it's the former, not the latter, but I think this is something that's flown very much under the radar.
Yeah.
Since we're on the air live right now, I talked to KOAT Channel 7 about this and did an interview on camera that's supposed to air later this evening.
Uh-huh.
So folks can check that out as well. They can also look at my post at heirsofenchantment.com and see more about this.
Yeah.
It is complicated. It is very much under the radar. It's not received a lot of coverage. And property taxes, I know, are a very sensitive issue for a lot of New Mexicans. And we've got an increasing number of residents locally, because of the aging population, that are on fixed incomes, that are retired. And while we have relatively low property taxes in New Mexico, there's certainly been a very significant upward trajectory on those residential taxes. And we also want to address the crime issue, but doing it in a way that makes the most sense. So there's a lot of different issues coming to the table here.
And a quick question to clarify some of the math in the article. When it says residential property taxes over the past decade have gone up a whopping 42%, and then it goes on to say, despite the fact that it's usually subject to a 3% annual cap, is that to say that over 10 years, at the most, it should have been 30%? And we're at least 12% higher than we probably should be?
Well, so by law, there's something called tax lightning that had been created, and the idea was to limit the amount of annual valuation increase. But the thing is that when you or I sell a house, those property valuations shoot back up to what they were supposed to be before. So you may be living in a house for decades and it's getting a 3% annual increase.
Right.
But then if you move or somebody passes on, then that property is suddenly restored to the highest value.
Right, okay.
And that's where you get a 42% increase.
And that's what, okay.
That's a slightly separate issue from what we're talking about with the commercial real estate. But property taxes, we've had how many shows, Steve, where we've talked about different issues and we've never really delved into the property tax issue, which is something that people always are concerned about. And so here we are, the property tax.
All right, something else over, especially the last few years, the citizens, not only in Albuquerque or New Mexico, but across the nation, I feel, have been concerned about is their ability to express themselves without censorship.
Yes.
That's making headlines again.
Yeah. It's a court case specifically called Missouri versus Biden. And I don't know why Missouri in particular, but several states have sued the Biden administration over their suppression of content from social media companies. And, you know, a year ago, year and a half before the Twitter files and now the Facebook files came out, there was questions about just how aggressive the federal government was being in terms of suppressing what they call COVID misinformation, information on the Hunter Biden laptop, which we all know is 100% true and was his laptop, various things that in retrospect, certainly, but also at the time, there was a lot of questions about the truth. But certainly when it came to COVID, a lot of things like the China lab leak theory seemed to be much more plausible than they were when they first came out. So the issue being debated in this court case, not a Supreme Court case, but it'll likely go to the U.S. Supreme Court. It had an initial ruling, and the judge actually referred to said that the federal government has put themselves up in a role like the Orwellian Ministry of Truth. That's from, of course, the novel 1984, where the government is really wielding a hammer over these social media companies like Twitter and Facebook and saying, credibly or not, we have reason to believe that this is inaccurate information, so we're going to Barry strongly suggests, including with fines and all kinds of other things, push you to suppress that information. Now, that's all important information. Why I brought it specifically to your attention is that attorneys general across the country, the leading law enforcement officers in their respective states, in our case, it's Raul Torres, often make policy statements in the form of friend of the court or amicus briefs. And in this case, our own Raul Torres has put forth or signed an amicus brief supporting the Biden administration, supporting government suppression of this information on social media and saying, yes, it's perfectly okay for this administration and future administrations, presumably, to badger Twitter or X or Facebook or whatever social media company and say, you should take that information down regardless of whether it's truthful information or not. And I think it's very dangerous. I think it's very frustrating. I was hoping Raul Torres would turn over a new leaf with regard to his approach to some of these friend of the court briefs and some of these more policy-driven issues at the Attorney General's office. He's seemed to try to take on a role as more of a stopping crime attorney general, which is great. I think the previous AG did not do a great job in that, but this is his first real foray into straight politics at the Attorney General's office. And unfortunately, he's coming down on the side of government censorship and repressing free speech online.
Well, I have to tell you, as a broadcaster, something that came to mind to me was, I mean, you know, having watched this over the last few years and giving that more of that control to government in these areas where there's clear debate with clear facts, that are being censored. Just wondering how long before, I mean, you know, we're already overseen by the FCC.
Sure.
But how long before, you know, we see more actions like that taken against broadcasting? I mean, you know, and the journalism, you're going to be on KOAT tonight. Yeah. You know, it's just a thought that crossed my mind, you know, and being so up in arms about seeing friends and others getting censored and shut out of social media. You have to wonder how long before it is, the whole Orwellian concept does come into play.
Well, they typically, with the so-called mainstream media, and you all fill a niche here that's slightly different, because when they rely on advertising, those advertisers are the point of least resistance for those who would tell people what to do. And, you know, since you're not entirely reliant on advertising to the same extent, it's you do have that capability. But obviously, anytime the government gets involved in trying to not just regulate, but blatantly limit certain forms of speech, it is incredibly frustrating. And, you know, I always remind people, the First Amendment is not to defend your right to say popular things that are widely recognized by 80% of the population. It's to say the things that are unpopular at a given time or may not widely be recognized or that the public may not be interested in at that time. And you need those people to be able to get their messages out about all kinds of issues. But obviously, COVID was kind of the poster child, and then the Hunter Biden laptop being 1A exhibit, you know, where clearly the federal government came in and suppressed that information.
Well, Paul Gessing is our guest today. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. And of course, we're going through much of the content that he's provided at errorsofenchantment.com. You'll also find riograndefoundation.org for information about the organization. We're going to come back with more on today's ABQ Connect right after this. All right, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Our guest for the full hour today, Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation and contributor to Errors of Enchantment. We're going through several of the blogs that Paul's provided. And, you know, Paul, I know last time you were here, last month, you talked about your trip to Texas and shared some, you know, things then. And you didn't stop there.
No. Well, I wrote a op-ed that appeared in the Albuquerque Journal on July 30th. And it really just noted that Texas has some very pro-free market policies on the books, like no gross receipts tax, at least not at 7% or more, no income tax. They have a right to work law on the books. State spending per person is less than half what it is in New Mexico. I could go on. They also have a very entrepreneurial can-do attitude in the state of Texas. And I stressed that I'm not saying that New Mexico should embrace all of Texas's policies or that we should be just like Texas culturally or politically. Simply that when you go to Texas and you actually travel around, you see just an energy and a vibrancy that unfortunately we really are lacking in New Mexico. And right now we have these chances with the amount of money that's flowing into our state from oil and gas to really make some big changes. And I also noted, you know, if you drive in Texas and you have to stop at a rest area, their rest areas are palatial when compared to New Mexico's. You know, they have local history. They have, they're very, very clean. They have just a lot of good things about them. Whereas, especially up and down I-25, our rest areas tend to leave a lot to be desired. And, you know, these are the welcome mat for our state. You know, a lot of people come through those two main interstate highways, not to mention other roads that could also use some improvement across the state as well here in New Mexico. And those are fighting words, saying nice things about Texas.
I will say this. It's been a few years since I've been up 550, but when they redid 550 in New Mexico, you know, that, of course, that goes like Bernalillo up to Aztec or
yep.
I actually was, you know, at that time I was like, great, this is good.
Yes.
We need more of this. And I will tell you, like 20 years ago when we were traveling more with, you know, younger kids, the rest stop thing has been an issue at least that long.
Yes.
And I like the descriptions someone put in one of the replies you got to what you had posted and mentioned, you know, a creaking, do you sit on it, picnic table next to a 55-gallon drum chained to a tree?
Yes.
Yeah, it would be nice to be more hospitable.
Yeah.
As a state, as people are traveling through.
Yes, and I traveled 550 up and back from Colorado just within the last week. And,
so how is it?
There are, to my knowledge, there's not a single rest area on that road between Bernalillo and.
But the condition of the road itself.
It has a ways to go still. Yeah. There are serious locations where there's a casino up north of Cuba. Totally changing subjects here. So we were coming back down, you know, you cross on the western side of the Jemez.
Uh-huh.
And so we were looking at that incredible fire, fire that had gotten started.
Yeah.
But there's up in that area north of Cuba, there's a lot of challenges with the roads. There's some real serious dips where the road just suddenly dives down, and then there's the quality of the road itself. I mean, it was the Johnson administration when that road was completely changed, and there's a lot of areas that, in addition to rest areas, we with the surplus money should be doing a better job of maintaining our roads as well. That's a separate
issue. The road conditions are mentioned
absolutely,
and it is something you know whether not just to Texas,
right?
When you cross the state line in several directions. That's just a noticeable thing as far as the road conditions.
Yeah. And, you know, I won't go through all of the responses, but if you really want to, press the button of a lot of New Mexicans, especially those on the left, but you know, there's a rivalry, at least as perceived by New Mexicans, for a variety of historical issues, including the fact that, you know, Texas has invaded New Mexico. Texas has claimed New Mexico or parts of it.
For the record, I was born on an Air Force base in Texas.
Fair enough. So somebody, you know, I got a number of responses. There were a few in the journal as well. Here's one short one. Why would New Mexico follow Texas into the depths of autocracy? The Texas Taliban is an existential threat to the U.S. Constitution. Texas is actively chipping away at constitutional rights such as voting and abortion. Texas supports Orange Jesus and rejects law and order. Like Texas, move. And we can quibble or flat out argue with.
Well, help me out. Maybe I've been living in a cave. I don't know what Orange Jesus is.
Trump.
Oh, okay. I'd never heard that. Okay, I get it, but I never heard it.
You know, obviously, there is no mention of abortion in the Constitution, and I don't think there is a
right to kill people.
There's a voting issue that Texas has undertaken. You know, there's more moderate and restrained approaches to who gets to vote and when, and there's more liberal and open approaches to that. And it doesn't mean that one is necessarily right or wrong. It just means that you know, Texas does things a little differently. I mean, I was a kid, it was all one day, voting day.
In New Mexico, if you can get a driver's license, you're registered to vote.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the biggest thing is that last line, though, like Texas, move. And, you know, it's a delicate thing because we love New Mexico.
I
love New Mexico.
I do.
But loving someone or something doesn't mean that you think it is absolutely 100% perfect as it stands now.
And I've said it several times on this show. Let's use this definition. Loving New Mexico means you want the best for New Mexico.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like
and I
loving.
Think that's what we. That's what we want.
And not just friends and family members, but loving people who have done crimes and done things that are no good, and loving those people.
You want the best for
is
them.
Is to want to help them improve.
That's right.
And
that's right.
New Mexico, we know the data. You know, the crime issues, the education issues, the economic issues as well, and. If I didn't love New Mexico, I would just leave. But I want to stay here and try to make New Mexico a little bit of a better place through the work that I've undertaken.
Yeah, and thanks for the work that you do through the Rio Grande Foundation and Errors of Enchantment. Let me give those websites again. Errorsofenchantment.com. You'll find everything we're talking about today in blog posts there from Paul. And then Rio Grande Foundation for more information about the Rio Grande Foundation. We're up against a break. We're spending time with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, for the remainder of the hour. We'll get back to our conversation right after the break on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Our guest for the full hour today is Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and covered already several topics that you may want to go check out. We won't revisit them today, but if you can revisit them at errorsofenchantment.com. You can also find this broadcast archived at abqconnect.online. And we move on to our next topic, and you know, I can just see, actually I doubt this even happened, but okay, repair a very important bridge or bike paths.
Right.
Another boondoggle.
This is one of the all-time greats, and I it's a new one that Mayor Keller, City of Albuquerque, has put forth. And the title of my blog post on it was Albuquerque Wasteful Spending Jumps the Shark. And for those who don't know the reference, it's from the Happy Days
when I do know
had a little jumping of the shark out on their water skis, and it was kind of like the moment everybody was like, all right, this show's just gone
done.
Completely off the radar. But the mayor has proposed a 7-mile bike trail that'll cost up to $80 million, and he's claiming that it'll be the most important public works project since the Big Eye or the Zoo were built, which is, you know, decades ago. And he's promising all kinds of improvements to downtown. This is going to go to the rail yards.
Sounds like he's expecting this to be a legacy project, really.
Yeah. He's got a very fancy architect named Antoine Predock, who's going to do a glowing tumbleweed. I mean, it is a lot of spending for a very, very small project in the grand scheme of things, which is a small bike path. I mean, bike paths are not that expensive, and it's
well,
not.
Don't we already have, like, per capita more bike paths than almost any city are this size?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that we have a lot of great bike paths, including a bridge over the Rio Grande that was built during the last, you know, the Obama stimulus era, when that bridge that you see when you cross over on I-40
over
the river.
Yeah.
There's that orange bridge. That was built on the north side.
Uh-huh.
That was built thanks to the Obama quote unquote stimulus program. But this is federal, state, and local dollars combining to build something that I think, not the Big Eye or the zoo, the biopark, but more the ART is what it resembles, which the ART, I think, is widely agreed upon as a complete waste of money that in many ways ruined Central and certainly put a lot of businesses on that road out of business. There are serious problems in downtown Albuquerque. They, in many ways, factor into what we discussed at the beginning of the show, which is that problem of developing downtown, and we have parking lots where buildings should be. We have empty and boarded up buildings. If we had better safety, more reasons for people to go downtown and actually do business and live and work down there, that would be a whole different situation.
I think you hit the nail on the head with art, though. I mean, pre-art, there was growing interest in downtown.
There was, yeah. Downtown was getting significantly better, and it was ART and the combined effects of also the COVID situation and the riots that happened. You know,
yeah.
COVID and the new remote work policy decimated healthy downtowns, and it really negatively impacted those like Albuquerque that were marginal. And trust me, I work in the Sims building in downtown Albuquerque. I've seen the depths of downtown when it was right after the George Floyd riots, when everybody had boarded up windows and very few people were coming to downtown on a regular basis. We have this tendency in this city, in this state, to try to solve problems with money and not doing the things that need to be done. What needs to be done is to address the homelessness and address the crime issues in downtown. And if we put this $80 or so million up for that, I would be all for it. But that is not what we're doing. We're hoping that spending money on a bike trail is somehow going to just lead to packs of people coming downtown to see the glowing tumbleweed, when in reality, we need to do the basics. And ART was the same thing. We need to improve Central and stop, you know, some of the crime and violence on Central. And instead, we put in a bus system. And it just is unfortunate, and it winds up eating up resources that could be used for things that'll actually help our city.
Well, I have to wonder as well, because whenever I see a project like that, especially, you know, work being done on the interstate, or, you know, on when they are doing work on the roads, how often you see the company that's working on it is from out of state.
True. That is a very real problem and challenge. And I in my posting, my original posting, I compare, there is a bridge just under I-25 South. It goes over the Rio Grande, where it kind of cuts back over the river. And that bridge, which carries 35,000 vehicles every single day, was in real disrepair, and they had to put in $1 million just to keep it kind of stabilized. That bridge is estimated to cost $80 million to repair. So, you know, there are real trade-offs that we're dealing with here. If we could get that bridge in a good condition, that is critical to the economy and the well-being of our residents, not so much this kind of fancy, unnecessarily expensive bike trail.
All right, and the complete article you'll find again at errorsofenchantment.com. We're in studio with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and you've weighed in recently on another one of the ideas Mayor Keller has as far as spending our money.
Yeah, now my organization, Rio Grande Foundation, worked very hard to defeat the taxpayer-financed stadium that the mayor wanted for the United Soccer Team. We're not against the United Soccer Team. I went to a game a few months ago. It was splendid. We don't want a taxpayer-financed stadium. Now, the mayor has recently said that he is going to put that stadium forth, and they're going to begin construction as early as this winter. We have $13.5 million in state funding because the state's got more money than it knows what to do with. So they stuck $13.5 million of capital outlay funds in a bill for funding the stadium. I don't support that, but that's not the city of Albuquerque, and it is what it is. So anyway, the mayor has really fixated now that he lost his ballot measure, which also was the rail yards. He loves that area of town, but he's decided he wants to put this thing at the Balloon Fiesta Park, which is a city-owned facility. Now, I don't have a knee-jerk problem with that. I do question whether there's enough parking that a stadium can be built and still have adequate parking for the Balloon Fiesta. We know Balloon Fiesta is the preeminent event that Albuquerque has every single year. We also don't know what will happen in terms of cost overrides and other potential challenges that maybe may arise with this facility taking up part of the parking lot. So my concern and my admonition here is that both this bike path and this United Stadium need to be fully vetted, publicly discussed, and voted on by the city council. We live in this allegedly representative democracy where we elect the city council as the primary policymakers for our city, and they need to find the answers to some of these issues and make sure that they have a vote on these important issues. That was never done with ART, as you're aware. There was never a standalone vote on ART, and that is one of the reasons I think we got sold that pig in a poke up and down Central. I don't want the same problems to arise with the bike trail and with the United Stadium if we just go forward on Mayor Keller's wishes and whims and we don't have a full vetting of those projects. And, whether especially on the United Stadium, there's just too many questions. He claims it won't interfere with landing of the balloons because it's close to the high-tension wires, and that may be the case, but will we be suddenly lacking in parking in that area for Balloon Fiesta and some of the events that happened there?
So the high tension wires stay when the stadium's there?
I guess so. And, why there is not a more high priority given to the addressing those high tension power lines and putting them underground and making it safer for the balloon pilots is a question that I have concerns about.
But. Yeah, I had some of the same thoughts. And so you say parking. Do we know that where they plan to put it would take some of the parking that's there, or would it utilize some of the parking spaces that are there, or would it take away you already mentioned the land. I think of the grass, all the where they land and take off.
Well, the stadium will definitely take parking. And I want you to picture, if you can, you're coming out of the Balloon Fiesta Park and you're on that road. I forget the name.
On the north end?
Crossing or looking at Alameda. This is across
Balloon Museum Drive.
Yeah, across Alameda towards the eastern side of that parking lot. And that's where the stadium is supposed to go. Now, everybody needs parking, including the soccer team and soccer patrons, as does the Balloon Fiesta Park. So you're going to have that parking there. But the stadium is going to take up a certain proportion of the area as well. And how much will we be losing in parking? Will that really not affect parking issues at the Balloon Fiesta and Balloon Fiesta Park? The thing is that Albuquerque has grown a lot over the years, and you build facilities, Cliffs, for example. You know, in a lot of places, a facility like Cliffs will just expand over time because they plan it that way because they know they want to build the latest and greatest roller coasters or whatever. Will you be limiting opportunities at Balloon Fiesta Park by building this facility? We need a firm. That is why we have these debates and discussions and things like city council to discuss them. We need that information to be brought forth and analyzed.
All right. And if you want to read up on the full blog, go to errorsofenchantment.com. We're up against a break, still in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing, the president of Rio Grande Foundation, and we'll be back with more. Yeah, we're going to revisit education. We'll get to it after the break on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. Once a month, we have our guest, Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. He's here for the full hour. In our final segment, we revisit, Paul, a topic that is not unfamiliar to any listener who's in the last year heard us during our full hour. We're back to talking about the New Mexico education system.
Now, the bad news is that that is never a good subject to talk about when we talk about New Mexico. The good news is that I have a hopeful solution for folks, or at least a component good of a solution to talk about. But a report from Wallet Hub, which they do a lot of reports, different aspects of our economy, as well as our education system, just interesting data in the way they look at it. They put these reports out, and we always look through the reports to make sure the variables make sense. And this is I would call it a pretty fair and reasonable report. But the upshot is not the news here is not that New Mexico's dead last at 51st. We know, we've talked about it. The NAEP scores, National Assessment of Educational Progress, called the Nation's Report Card. New Mexico was 51st in the latest edition. All across reading, math, both categories, both age groups, it was very devastating. But what I think is the most interesting is that this Wallet Hub report highlights district spending and state spending on education and contrasts it. You know, are you getting the education system that you are paying for? And New Mexicans clearly are not, because our spending is 20th most. Most people are still stuck 20 years ago when they were underfunded in New Mexico's education system at K-12. But we have spent a lot of money, and that money has been complemented, if you will, by the fact that we've had a decline in the student population. We've seen APS, but APS is by no means alone. The number of students attending New Mexico's public schools has dropped precipitously. So, we're ranked 20th in spending, but 51st in results. And being in what the Wallet Hub calls high spending and weak school system is the least favorable place to be in their ratings. They do.
There we go.
You know, are you getting? There's plenty of states that have good results and low spending. There's places that have high spending and poor results,
spend
like New Mexico.
Wisely.
But you would like to see the results. And you know, I'm all about money. I'm a money guy. But when it comes to results, 51st is just not acceptable, and it's something we should all be working as hard as we possibly can to change.
Well, we got about 2 or 3 minutes, and I know you said there's something that could help with this, and I know you want to spend some time talking about, is it a free conference that's coming?
Is a free conference.
And really, if you're a concerned citizen, you're welcome to attend.
Absolutely. And you can find out more about it at oaknm.org. You can sign up right there on that website. Opportunities for All Kids is what that website stands for.
Would you give that again?
oaknm.org. That is the website. And it's the Opportunities for All Kids Conference. Free all day, September 22nd at St. Pius the 10th High School on Albuquerque's west side. This is a statewide conference, though. We've got people not just coming from all parts of the state, but flying in from other areas of the country to present their findings. And the thing that I really like to focus on with the Rio Grande Foundation, our education results, especially given the terrible outcomes, is that we need all hands on deck, all solutions to be considered.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
We look at private school choice. So do we follow Arizona and create ESAs, education savings accounts, to empower parents and families to choose the school that's best for them? Charter schools. What do we do with charter schools? Can we improve our charter school law to improve the outcomes coming out of those schools? And they are great. There's a lot of great charter schools, but there's a lot of challenged charter schools. What can we do to improve and make that a better part of our education system? And then our traditional schools as well. We know the challenge is there. What levers can we pull to improve upon those? We talked about Mississippi a few months ago and right. their education results. They did it through their traditional school system. There's school boards. There's 529 plans. There's all kinds of things that we have talked about, because we do talk about education pretty much every single show. And this is kind of the solutions phase. So go to oaknm.org and sign up for our education conference. It's pretty much all day, 9 to 4 on Friday, September 22nd. So it's coming up. We'll have another conversation before then, but it'll be happening right then.
And it'll be at a private school, St. Pius, on the west
side. A school
of
choice, yes. Not by accident. Of course, those schools like St. Pius, which once upon a time, not too long ago, was a archdiocesan school in the Catholic Church, is now an independent school that has a close relationship with the archdiocese. So that's just one of many schools like it out there, but it'll give people an opportunity to see, you know, it's a beautiful facility.
Well, we would encourage, if you're concerned about, and listen, you may be homeschooling, you may have kids in another private school.
Yep.
If you're a concerned citizen, though, if you want to see change in New Mexico, a better educational system means we're bringing up the next generation that hopefully will stay here. It will make a difference for you and for your family, even if you're not involved with public school. Paul Guessing from the Rio Grande Foundation has been our guest. Thanks, Paul.
Well said, Steve, and thank you very much.
All right, and join us again tomorrow. ABQ Connect will get your Friday financial update and an update from the Heritage Foundation on ABQ Connect.